Welcome to the River of Calms Beyond the Music podcast. I'm your host, pianist Ed Basil, and the River of Calm is music to soothe your soul. And our Beyond the Music podcast gives you a closer look at the artists who are on the River of Calm. And today in the studio, we have pianist and composer Joseph Akins. Joseph, welcome.
Hey there. Hey, Ed. Glad to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. I know you have a busy schedule. You know, you're a professor at MTSU. You're a prolific pianist and all kinds of stuff. So we're just glad to have you in the studio and to get to know you better. So with that, let's just start it off with the general big, wide open arms. How did you get started in music? Where did it start?
Well, I grew up in a musical family. Many years ago, my father was a band leader. He played guitar and was a singer. And my mother was a singer. My older brother and sister were musicians, especially my brother. He played multiple instruments. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up in a musical band. And by the time I was 12 years old, I was going out with my family to play in local nightclubs every weekend. They played country and rock music. Mm-hmm. And I was playing saxophone actually at first.
No way. Serious? Wow.
Yeah, I played saxophone in school band. And my dad was a big fan of Boots Randolph and Ace Cannon and some of those instrumental artists. So that was my early inspiration. And then I was taking piano lessons at age 10. And so eventually I was playing saxophone and piano and keyboards, like organ, in my dad's band every weekend. Plus, I was playing band at school. I was playing saxophone in the concert band.
Tenor or baritone? Or
I was playing alto. Alto was my primary sax. I also had a tenor because, you know, it worked really well with the band when you want to do rock country music. The tenor had a more aggressive sound,
right? But that alto has such a deep, sexy sound to it, you know.
Oh yeah, it's pretty. It's a beautiful instrument.
Definitely. I had no idea you played sax. I thought you were strictly a pianist, and that was it. Wow. So you started lessons when you were how old?
I started taking formal piano lessons when I was 10 and formal saxophone lessons when I was 10. I did play by ear before that because all my family played by ear. But I believe I'm the first person ever in my family to learn to read music. And that was at age 10.
Wow. No kidding. Nice. And so your dad was a musician, brothers and sisters in the music world?
Yeah. Now, My father was a carpenter by day, and his he was a weekend musician on the side. He performed, and to him it was a way to make extra money, to make a living. It's something he loved to do. And my brother followed suit, and he's 10 years older than me, my brother, and he was very talented. He could play bass, drums, piano, singer, and so I came along, and it was just okay. That's what we do.
I guess so. Wow. Wow. So cool on that. So you played in the band. You played in your dad's band. You took lessons was a piano or in piano for at age 10. How long did you take lessons for?
Well, I took lessons for a few years, not too long. It was on and off. And then I got more serious about it when I got about 16, on and off. And then when I got in college, I was, when I got out of high school, I wanted to be a rock star. So I joined a rock band that had a touring bus and an album. And I played in the rock band for 2 years. And that was the rock and roll lifestyle of the early 80s.
Nice. Did you have big hair?
Different colors, you know.
I hear you.
And then when I went to college University of Tennessee in Chattanooga, I decided to get really more serious about lessons. And I was taking classical piano and saxophone. But I never really wanted to be a classical pianist. And to me, it was a way to learn how to be a better player. And but then eventually I transferred to UT in Knoxville and majored in jazz piano. And I really loved that and did
Yeah. Was that, was classical, and maybe I'm reading into this, was classical too constricting for you?
Yeah. See, I think it's because I grew up in a family where everybody just played and no one read music. And then I would take piano lessons and I had to play. I remember when I started piano lessons, I didn't want to play every note that was on the page, just the way it was written. And fortunately, I had a piano teacher that allowed me to elaborate. So I never saw myself as becoming a professional classical pianist that would recreate exactly what a classical composer wanted. I hate to use the word boring, but to me, it just didn't excite me. I always wanted to, you know, add improvise and add my own music and compose. So rock music and then jazz music and was more, you know, natural and felt more comfortable to me.
Now, let's dial it back just for a second. When you were a kid, did you have any dreams that you're going to be a spaceman or a football player or anything? What was your childhood dream if you had one?
A baseball player. That's easy. Yeah.
Wow. No kidding.
Yeah. I joined the little league at age 7 and just fell in love with baseball. And
nice.
I got pretty good at batting. I was I had a pretty good batting average, but I couldn't throw a ball worth a flip. I just never could. You know, I never could throw it exactly where I wanted to. So.
Right. Right. But you were able to get on base by batting.
I was. I just loved it. I was wanting to be a baseball star in the major league up until I was about 12. And that was the age at which I began playing with in my father's band. And once I did that, I knew that that was my place in life, music.
Understandable. Okay, so we'll go back up now. You're at UT Knoxville in the jazz program, correct?
Yeah.
Good. And how was that? That called to you more than classical, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. While I was there, I studied with a great teacher named Jerry Coker, one of the, he's considered the father of jazz education, just a big influence on me. In so many ways, he was a saxophonist, but I studied composition with him. I studied improvisation. And then there was a jazz pianist named Donald Brown from Memphis who came there. He played with folks like Art Blakey and Wynton Marsalis. And he, so he came there and I took lessons with him for a couple of years. And I also studied music technology while I was there. So I learned about synthesizers and keyboards and recording. It was a really fantastic experience.
Nice. Did you like the educational aspect of it? Because now fast forward to today and where you are now.
Oh, absolutely. I use a lot of what I learned there in everything I do, is, you know, with music. Yes.
Okay. So you study at UT Knoxville. You get out. What do you do?
Well, when in my last year there, I found that I love to teach in higher education. I like I mentioned, Jerry Coker was a big influence on me. And he encouraged me to go to graduate school. And so I went to a school in Virginia to get a master's degree in music because they offered a teaching fellowship. And and I knew by then that I felt that teaching would be a part of my future. And And so I took that opportunity and went to Radford, Virginia for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And had my first experience with teaching and taking some graduate level master courses, music courses.
Wow.
Including theory and history and some private lessons and those sort of things.
Mm-hmm. So you finished that. And yeah, and then how did you evolve from there to here? Right now, your present day, you're a professor at MTSU.
Yeah, it gets bumpy after that. I wanted at the time when I got my master's degree, I didn't want to go into teaching full time. I wanted to have a full time music career. So, one of my professors, Donald Brown, encouraged me to move to New York. So I moved there for a short while, and, that was, going well, but then some things happened. I started having some health issues, and my father got Alzheimer's disease.
Mm-hmm.
And just a bunch of bad things that made it really tough to stay there.
Right. Happened.
So I came back to Tennessee and to help take care of my father who had Alzheimer's disease.
Mm-hmm.
And then between that and some other things that were going on in my life, I started looking at life very differently. I started seeking more spiritual, some spirituality in my life and
some
deeper understanding of life. And and of course, that changed my purpose in music. So I began to meditate, do yoga, seeking for peace in my life. And so I found music to be a part of that. And also to help, I experimented with music and around my father who had Alzheimer's, and I saw how it affected him. So it was after that, I decided to not go back to New York or do anything like that. My father passed away, and I just decided to stay here, and I started composing music that you hear now. I released my first album shortly after that called Keys to the Heart. That was in 1997. And so if you want to call it New Age music or contemporary instrumental music, it comes from a place of, peace and purpose for being calm and relaxed and music that is to help and heal people. And
nice.
So that's how I got there. And that was about the late 90s when that happened.
I want to say also, very cool that you meditate and do yoga. I'm a TM meditator. And yoga, I'm a very klutzy guy doing sun salutations. So, but I hear you right there being, spiritual and really, there's a higher purpose or there's a greater purpose, or I don't know how to put it, but I really think it's cool the track you're on here. So with this, now we're going to get to your writing process to get here, but first off, in your whole scope, who were your musical biggest influences?
Musical influences, well, they changed during my life. Let's go with that time when I started writing this music that's healing or instrumental piano music. And David Lawns was probably my biggest influence at the time. I also listened to George Winston, Jim Brickman, those three, but definitely David Lawns was a big influence, but also some other artists that are not pianists, such as Enya.
Right.
David Arkenstone. I'm a big
fan. Love him.
Oh, I was a Yeah, big fan. First time I met David Arkenstone, I was just starstruck, you know?
Oh, gosh. Spirit of Olympia, that album. Oh, gosh. Loved it.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're right in the pocket there. I feel you on your influences there and how that translates and amalgamates into Joseph Aiken. So with this, how many right now, just for a broad stroke, how many CDs do you have out?
Well, I have eight CDs. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow, you slacker. You really are.
Well, and, one of them is My Greatest Hits. That's my most recent. One of them is a Christmas album. And actually I have a ninth one from the 80s that's all pop music. Just on vinyl record.
Oh, no kidding. Cool.
But I usually don't count that one because it's not available.
Right. It's understand.
Not, yeah.
Okay, so with this, so how does your writing process work? It's always a fascinating question for me. Is it at the piano? Is it when you're out and you record things in your, you know, iPhone, or just how does it work for you? What inspires you? What's your best writing?
Well, usually when I begin writing, it comes from just improvising, you know, just playing around, and I may be inspired by something at the time, or I may not. You know, it could be I just watched a movie that I was touched by, or maybe I'm feeling melancholy about something, or maybe it's raining outside I just feel at peace with it. It may be something like that, or it may just be that I'm ready to write and just motivated. Mm-hmm. And I'll just begin playing. Now, I have to be sure and record because I may not remember when I sit down and start playing. I may not remember something.
I hear you loud and clear. Short-term memory, forget it. I use a GarageBand and I just record, you know, my ideas on it. And thank God I have them because I'll forget 5 minutes later. Wow.
Yeah. And it could be just the smallest thing, right? It could be, you're not able to recapture that feel.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Totally. Now, do you commit to sit and write at a certain time, or is it just when the feeling calls to you?
It depends on the time of year. If I'm able to do it in my schedule, I really do feel it's better if I can just do it every morning at 10. But like right now, where I'm really busy with MTSU, I'm just doing it whenever I can. It may be I have 10-minute break in classes, and I'll do it then, or late at night. You know, just whenever I can get to it.
Mm-hmm. Now, does your writing come naturally, or do you have to work at it?
I think it feels pretty natural most of the time. There may be some times when I feel like it's work. For instance, I may have a composition, a piece, a song that I feel that's almost complete, but there's something that's just not working. Maybe I can't find that one way. I can't find a way to, to bridge into one part to another.
Right.
Or maybe there's a particular note that's just bothering me. I just can't be happy about. And then that could take work, you know, just in time to work out something like that.
I hear you loud and clear. Now you have eight CDs. Well, nine, if you count vinyl, out of all of this body of work, and it is a body of work, that's a lot of commitment and work. What, if you can identify, what is your favorite song out of your whole body of work?
Oh my goodness. That's a tough one. I have favorites for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually whatever's my newest. I'm working on one that's about 1 week old.
Mm-hmm. And
I would say it's my favorite right now because it's so fresh and growing and mm-hmm. it's like the baby I just had. And I can just get so lost in it. So it's hard to say. Well, you know, back when I recorded Spirit Touch in 2009, I recorded an arrangement of Tennessee Waltz.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that one is special to me because when I started playing with my father in his band at age 12, he taught me four different songs so I could play in his band. And he taught those to me by ear. But, you know, he would just play a note and then I would copy the note. He'd mm-hmm. play a note. He would play the melody on his guitar. Mm-hmm. I would find the notes on my saxophone.
Nice.
One of the first songs that he taught me was Tennessee Waltz. Mm-hmm. So that one is special, even though I didn't write it. I did record it.
And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I know we play it on the River of Calm. And I always smile because that's such a classic song and you have a great approach to that particular piece.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that would be your favorite song, or do you have another one? Or shall we stick with Tennessee Waltz for today?
I'd mentioned to you that Winter Is Here is mm-hmm. a favorite of mine. I'm going to be playing at the ZMR award show coming up later next month. And I do plan on closing with it.
Nice.
And my wife really loves that one. It's on my recent album, Into the Flow. And mm-hmm. it's really fun to play.
Nice. Winter Is Here. And that's from Into the Flow, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I believe we have another pianist, Eric Bykalis, who produces these Beyond the Music podcast for us. He's going to pull up Winter Is Here, and why don't we take a listen to it now and just enjoy it?
Thank you.
And there you have it. That's Winter Is Here by Joseph Akins on the CD Into the Flow. Very good job on that, Joseph.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, where can we find these 8 CDs? What is your website?
Well, it's my name, josephakins.com, and my last name is A-K-I-N-S, josephakins.com. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get the CDs and the sheet music.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Directly from me, autographed.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool. Now, you also, it's really cool, you host house concerts at your house there. And you have quite a following, too, don't you?
Yeah. We've been really successful. We've had about a dozen of them.
Uh-huh. Nice. Mm-hmm. And I see you bring in other artists. I've seen, I believe, Philip Wesley there. There was also Neil Patton. And mm-hmm. I also see you do a great job with your CDs and sheet music, too. That's taking care of business there. So with all that, let's say with your house concerts, with your piano career, with your teaching, with your Tennessee Waltz, with your dad, if you can look back at your life musically, what are you most proud of?
Most proud of? Well, musically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
I would say there's so many things. I think releasing my albums are something I'm really proud of. When I released The Southern Sun back in 2013, mm-hmm. I just felt like I was really on my game when I released that album, that I was playing well and writing well, mm-hmm. and it just came out to be a good album, and I'm really proud of that one.
Nice.
And a couple of years after that, I performed at the Grand Ole Opry. I substituted for a keyboard player there, and I backed up a country singer.
Uh-huh.
And I'm having trouble remembering his name right now.
Oh, I understand. There's tons of them, and they're all gifted and talented. But just the thought of you being on the Opry stage there and being a part of that history.
That's cool. It was bliss. He did Rose Colored Glasses. John
Conley?
John Conley. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I played there 2 nights.
Wow.
And it was sold out. There was 4,400 people in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wish so much my father could have been there to see that.
Oh, wow. No kidding. I'm sure he was looking down from above to see you and smiling on that one for sure. What a cool moment.
Yeah, wow. It was.
And again, I was just talking musically. You have, you're gifted as a teacher. You've got a wife who is a beautiful singer. You've got a lot of things to be proud of. So
thank you.
I appreciate you just identifying that. Now, everyone knows the musical Joseph Akins. Everyone sees it, knows it. But what's one thing, if you can tell us and share with us, what's one thing that people probably don't know about you?
Well, let's see. And that I would want to share.
That you'd want to share, yes.
I've already said a lot of things about my past.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rock star, long hair, yoga, meditation. Mm-hmm.
That about covers it.
Okay. All right. So you're not giving anything up. Is that what you're saying?
Well, let's see. I'm a big fan of the show Game of Thrones, and it's mm-hmm. on my mind right now because the last season is about to come out.
Oh, wow.
And I'm also a big fan of animals, and we have 3 cats.
3 cats. Wow.
My wife and I have Siamese cats, and, mm-hmm. We love them. And, and I think I mention I love to read.
No.
A lot of books. I collect a lot of books. Let's see.
Fiction, nonfiction?
Yeah, mostly nonfiction, but I do love fantasy. Mm-hmm. Here's a good one for you. You remember when I was a kid, most of my friends were making models of cars. Did you ever make
model cars? Oh, absolutely, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't make model cars. I made model monsters. I don't know if you remember a few decades back, but you could buy these little model monsters and put them together, glue them together. So yeah. There's like the Wolfman, Frankenstein, Dracula. I got all those. I was about 9 or 10 years old and put those together. I still have them today. I have them on a shelf today.
No way. Are you serious?
You have to come over and I'll show them to you. Yeah.
Oh, heck yeah. And I'm thinking back to the 10-year-old Joseph Akins with his fingers glued together with that model glue. It's so tough. Oh, gosh. Yeah. That's really cool. Yes. And you need to share a picture of that with us, too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Now, we've got to wrap up here soon. So if you had one musical wish, a musical wish that you could grant yourself or anyone, what would it be?
A musical wish. I would wish that music that is healing, that is peaceful and is relaxing, would have more, that would be easy to access, that it would be available and people would know about it and people could get to it and see it and hear it, and it would have a visible place. It seems there's so much out there, especially with the internet, so much fighting for our attention. I would love to see music that is positive. Mm-hmm. That's good music and positive and beneficial to a peaceful world. And I'd like to hear it, see it, and available for everyone.
I can totally see why you're on the River of Calm, your music. I really mean that. Your music is all over it, and I'm thrilled that you're here with us. And lastly, Tim Ferriss, who has the 4-Hour Work Week and a number of different books out, he always asks a question, and that's, if you had one billboard that we could put across the country to spread the message of Joseph Akins, what would that billboard say?
How about listen to River of Calm?
As I said, did I mention how perfect you are for the River of Calm? well, that works then. Well, there you have it. It's a behind-the-scenes look at pianist and composer Joseph Akins on the River of Calm's Beyond the Music podcast. I'm your host, Ed Basil, and the River of Calm is music to soothe your soul. May the calm be with you.